Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report.
Rawr, rawr, rawr.
That was like if Wrecker was pretending to be a human motorcycle starting.
Ooh, almost. You're so close. I'll yes and you and say yes, absolutely. So he's trying to be a speeder bike that's broken. It was Wrecker doing the monster that tries to get him.
Oh, yeah. The monster who, according to the subtitles, is a Dianoga.
Mm. Wait, I just choked on my water. What?
Right? So, I had this weird journey because I watch it. I always watch the episode at midnight and just watch it. I was like, this is definitely some Dianoga beats, some Dianoga feels. Mm-hmm. That'd be great if they really solidly encountered a Dianoga sometime. And then I was rewatching this morning with subtitles, and it was like Wrecker groans, Dianoga howls or whatever.
Wow. Okay. I mean, like a super Dianoga. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, who are we to assume all Dianogas look exactly alike, you know?
Right. Exactly. And look at all tracks, right? You got trash water.
Right. Yeah, you got the, I'll take some of that. Wait, is this organic? Gross. Yeah, and I mean, really, this could just be like that Dianoga that we met in the trash compactor is trying to live off of that really kind of puny amount of trash in very shallow trash water, whereas this Dianoga is like Braca is a buffet.
Yeah, well, it's like, I've had iguanas, you know, you keep it in a small cage, maybe it stays smaller. You put it on Baraka, huge.
This is Dianoga in a big planet-sized cage. Exactly. So there's a little foreshadowing of what we're going to be talking about later. This is the all Dianoga episode. No, I lie. I'm a big liar, and my name is Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Ken Epsuk. I can confirm, such a liar Joseph is.
Always a liar. Is it even really my name, or have I been lying all these years, even to myself? Who knows? Who knows? But yes, we are here and excited for this seventh episode of the Bad Batch Report to discuss battle scars. This is, of course, episode 7 of the Bad Batch television show. It is written by Jennifer Corbett. That's very cool because she is the head writer of the whole show and is directed by another name that we recognize from the Clone Wars, Saul Ruiz. And this episode, we could tell, was going to be a very special episode because it's about 3 minutes longer than the episodes have been. This was a 27-minute episode, a very, very special episode of The Bad Batch. So, Ken, what was your overall reaction? Love it, like it, struggle with it? Was it a very special episode to you?
It was a very special episode. That really makes sense. I really enjoyed what this episode set out to do, which was for me, my interpretation was kind of have the Bad Batch literally lost in their own past as maybe they contemplate how to move forward, which they've been doing for a couple of weeks now. And I don't say that as, hey, they're repeating beats. I'm just like, there's some deep thinking that's going on in this episode. Great action mixed with some of the quietest introspection yet. I think there were some real quiet moments of import.
Yeah. I really, really liked this episode. I thought it was, you know, important. Obviously, we've been waiting for Wrecker's head to go off, Wrecker's horror to go off. And this was a very different episode as well as kind of a significant one plot wise. But I think what I was really struck by is I really, really enjoyed it. Not necessarily for the plot. A lot of the plot was the fun in the horror of the tragedy that, you know, is coming. Mm-hmm. Being set off. But right. What made this special is that because this wasn't a big plot or revelation heavy episode, it was just all about the emotions, right? This was just Star Wars as a visual and emotional storytelling of, there's some great canon stuff we can discuss and some what ifs and great big themes and all that. But this was really like sometimes I say this term is a joke because it can be abused, but I really mean it this time of like, this was a tone poem about loss and hope. It was just letting you sink into the emotions of it.
I always love that term tone poem. I use it a lot. And not just Star Wars discussions, life. I love a good U2 tone poem song. All right. no, you're saying things I absolutely loved about this episode because there is, there's this, hey, remember this person appearance of the week, which might bother some. It doesn't bother me, especially we knew Rex was coming, you know, if you looked at the trailer. So
a shot from this episode in the trailers. Yeah,
exactly. So there's that. And then there was there was really no mystery. And last week we had mystery of who's in the cape that Trace and Roth are talking to. And it's probably Rex. Guess what? It's Rex. And we get that answer early. Hey, we've been waiting for Wrecker to something go on with his head. Hey, it happened and we solved that problem. So all those things to me are like, yeah, great. Almost like get them out of the way. Not saying that the Jennifer Corbett and team were trying to do that. I'm just saying for me, I was like, yeah, you know what? Get that out of the way. And let's talk with the clones. Let's figure out what's going on with the clone. That other big plot stuff and the canon stuff and what's moving this season forward. We'll get to that. I really did enjoy what you're talking about. This tone poem of clone thoughts.
Yeah. Clone thoughts and just like the utter darkness of the galaxy. This is another Omega coming of age of being exposed to like, this is how rough and awful the galaxy really can be, that someone you love can be trying to murder you and you have to find your way through even that, you know? There's a real horror movie aesthetic to a lot of it. And just a lot of that idea of you've got to pass through the darkness to get back to even some possibility of light or hope. And I think because this was such an emotional tone poem, we talk every week about just how great the animation looks. But I think sometimes we can almost talk about that of like almost from the tech side of like, it's amazing what they can do with those ones and zeros these days. But this episode really paid off in terms of those visuals being able to communicate an extra amount of beauty, you know, of really making you feel the emotions. That shot in particular for me of Rex in the doorway. We cut seconds later to him looking at his helmet and reflecting on being a soldier, which is meaningful. But like, I almost paused on my first viewing, which I try not to do, just to look at like that one shot that it was absolutely beautiful, haunting painting of a forlorn, thoughtful Rex thinking in the doorway of this, you know, destroyed version of his former home, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, that motif was so just, it just jumped off the screen, just literally in the ruins of the past. It really worked for me. That's a great, I love that you called that shot out. A lot of little beautiful moments.
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess another thing for me is I've been fascinated with the way that this whole show has been structured, that each episode does feel like a self-contained adventure. Like this one could be called the one where they get their chips out, right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
But it never is losing track of centering the big questions, right? And in this one, it recentered that question of who does the Bad Batch want to be in the galaxy? Who are they going to choose to be? It just has that great plot question of who all is after them. What do they need to be worried about? It recenters this idea of can they protect Omega? And I think what I was really struck by is on the plot side of things, they've been setting up the ticking time bomb of Wrecker's Head and even referred to it as the time bomb in this episode. So the question in my mind of when it went off, I kept kind of thinking about when is the worst time it could go off, and the fact that it isn't when they're being chased by the Empire, when they're being brought back to Kamino, or when they're facing Crosshair or any of the other threads, the fact that they made the choice to, the only person who's really in deep danger when Wrecker's Head goes off is the rest of Bad Batch, but particularly Omega. It centers Omega, because if you think about when is the worst time that Wrecker's chip could go off, you could probably come up with like more complex and dynamic action scenarios, right?
Right.
But it's not about action. It's about the absolute worst thing that could happen is that Wrecker could turn on Omega. And it really centers protecting her as the highest stake of the show.
Yeah. Excellent point as always, but tying it to literally some of the stuff Hunter is saying at the end, as he's weighing the big picture stuff with Rex, and it's like, that's the number one focus, Omega, you know, and there's obviously other things that they're in their mind, but I thought it was really interesting that he's like, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do, but the kid's number one. And this whole episode really, really solidifies that. And then they break your heart because they start with some great, you know, comedy up top and the Mantel mix and all that stuff. So well said on how to use that that ship going off effectively.
Yeah, and it does continue to center that Hunter truly listened to the Quains, Cut and Sue, and is like, no, I'm a parent now, and Rex, in his offer, I think, you know, they still might come around to, yeah, no, we need to fight back against the Empire, but for like this episode, it almost had a great like your buddy's wondering if you can you know, go on this big trip. Like, nah, I got a kid.
Hey, I'm kind of living that sometimes in other things in life. Yeah. We'll get to that end scene, but Rex kind of keeping with his theme, even some of the stuff with Cut, going back to the actual Clone War stuff, just choices. We understand the importance of choice and the value of choice and what it is to give people that choice, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Big, big theme. So let's dive into that. What did you feel were the big themes? What were the ideas most at stake in this episode for you?
Oh, yeah. All right. Follow me on these ones here. I'll start with this. You talked about some already, identity, what you want to be, what you want to fight for. Those kind of hang over this entire series, right?
Right.
They'll pop back up. So putting those ones aside a little bit, though, again, I think it all ties. I started this train of thought I put the power of friendship. It's a good Huey Lewis B-side. We never heard that one. And there's all these examples of that where you got Omega and Wrecker running all the way through, but especially the stuff at the beginning. I mean, it's just, we keep using that term endearing. Endearing pops up a lot too with Omega and everything, but just like, what a fun little, can we, Hunter? We got to go get the candy. and go from there, their friendship. And that's all the way through here. Rex says, I had to have help removing my chip, which, you know, is a tip of the iceberg thing and all these kind of stuff. But it's like, he couldn't do it alone. Omega's afraid of being left alone there with no one. It's a great heart-wrenching moment. Omega pleading, Wrecker, I'm your friend. And this idea of there's a line, from Rex, we're here, others are out there too. This connection is so big in Star Wars. Power of friendship, it really popped for me in this episode. A couple other things after that, but I'll kick it back to you if you agree or disagree on friends.
No, I think that's a really astute observation of that is a big Star Wars theme, but this episode really does bring it out of these are all badasses, right? Mm-hmm. But they are badasses who are this unit who work together. The squad is everything to the Bad Batch, and particularly to Hunter, talking about what he has to do at the end. He has to do what's best for his squad. And you're right, that just gets repeated from everybody's perspective. And a good contrast with Sid, who's like, well, I will keep you around right now because you have value to me, and I feel like I have you over a space barrel.
Yeah.
And so that's your value to me, but I'm not running, a clone club. It's very much not about friendship. It's about what is your value to me? And that's a great contrast to everything that you are highlighting, where we are hearing from Rex's perspective, from Hunter's perspective, from Omega, mm-hmm. and from Wrecker's perspective, that friendship and connection is the highest stake. That's what matters the most.
And I love that Sid has literally a running list, a Google Doc, if you will, of what you owe her.
Yeah. And I that's actually financially, but I sense that Sid probably has that with anyone she considers a friend, too.
Yeah.
Like, remember when you had that breakup and I listened? You owe me emotionally for that.
The old friend bank.
The old friend bank. I really thought that was great. I think the biggest theme for me, and I think maybe just the title Battle Scars is what made me think about it. But I also think it was just kind of what emotionally affected me in the episode. And the name of the theme that came to me is damaged things still have value. Maybe that's occurring to me for some reason as I get a little bit older and live through a pandemic, that damaged things still have value. Yeah. But I loved how often this was highlighted. Rex is really defined as old and battle worn by himself, but also by everyone he is interacting with. That's a great Omega moment of being extremely observant that keeps being a thread. But says you're a generation one. I can tell from the lines on your face, like right away, we are defining Rex as old. He is original, probably creaky. If Omega is the brand new and what is meant to be the next generation, possibly everything takes place on Braca. The fact that it's a salvage planet of like, this is a bunch of broken old crap, but we can salvage something worthwhile out of this old broken stuff. It's a whole planet of old broken stuff that might still have value. And then they attach that that idea to the cruiser as well of Rex being in this bittersweet place of reminiscing. And this is an original Venator class ship from the first batch off the line. And Wrecker directly is like, yep, just like you. Ha ha ha. And it's a fun, great Wrecker joke, but it is this idea of these old things, even though they're damaged, still have value. And then I think perhaps kind of fresh for ways that we've heard people talk about this characters, talk about this era, Rex even defines the Republic as still existing, is damaged but alive, you know? Hunter pushes back and says, Rex says that he's still fighting for the Republic. He always has been. And Hunter says the Republic's gone. And Rex says, not all of it. We're here. Others are out there, too. You highlighted the others are out there, too line is friendship. But often when we've heard characters talk about this era of time, even up to the Galactic Civil War, it's been this story of we have to get the Republic back. It was really interesting to hear Rex say, like, no, the Republic's still here. It's just very damaged and we need to restore it.
Yeah, this is great stuff, man. I feel you. And maybe it's because you and I are out here in a city where often we're told to our faces, and we usually get the easy path out here. Just like, hey, you're too old. You're too old. I was told that from some YouTube companies. Nah, you're too old to be on air now. So I feel you, man. I feel we're generation one clones sometimes. But it really was effective. I'm right here with you on this because when the fact that Rex is like, I'm not just going back to like a shell of a spaceship I knew, like this will help us. The value of going to that med bay really popped for me of literally going through the trash to get saved in a way.
Yeah, exactly. And I even feel like that's kind of going on with the Bad Batch themselves, right? Of they are in this middle of this kind of being actively damaged. They're in this place of crisis and trying to come out of it. And this, the heart of this episode is seeing the beauty of Wrecker and Omega's relationship, and then it gets horrifically damaged. But it ends on this moment of hope of like, no, even this damaged moment in this relationship can be repaired. It can be salvaged, right? And Omega's just like, no problem. It's okay. Let's eat our mantel mix.
Yeah, no, excellent. It's the power of friendship, but for sure. But I really, really right here with you on this idea of not leaving anything behind unless you need to. That's a different therapy path. But it resonates for us old folks.
Yeah, exactly. Shop at Goodwill is what I'm saying. old things still have value. What are some other themes or ideas that jumped out to you?
You know, so I went to the chip thing, which is, this plot point. We've been kind of waiting for this moment. Again, I love that. I don't even know if we're necessarily done with chips, inhibitor chips as a plot point here in this Bad Batch. I probably more to come. But the fact that issue was raised, it has been raised, and then it was essentially solved in this episode. I really love that. If you understand what I mean, you know, like if I'm being clear, of just like, there's no more mystery. The chips are out.
Right. It wasn't like Wrecker went off and then they kind of couldn't figure things out. And they're like, okay, well, when is tech going to go off? And what's that going to look like? Nope.
Right.
They're out. They're done.
And I kind of just like that because I was focusing on the chips and this idea, this, you know, what's in there, only what you take with you. I think this might resonate for me of just overcoming what's inside you. And now there's this issue of control I want to talk about as well, but overcoming what's inside you, doubt, fear, mistakes, scars. And sometimes you have to go directly to your past to confront what is there. Like we're going to the shadows of the Clone War. We're going all these places and they have something inside them that they have to face in some way or whether it's personified perhaps best by Wrecker, who has this fear of heights and all these things. And it's comical at times, but he doesn't want to do the surgery and then it goes bad. And then, but you know, it represented just like what's inside you that you sometimes have to face, which is to me, it's at times a big Star Wars theme, especially I'm thinking of Luke and The Last Jedi and things like that. So that popped for me as well.
Well, in even Rex, I loved how seriously they took it, right? Of Rex's damage from what he's gone through. And we don't even know how many other clones he's interacted with at this point, but we got to see in season 7 of Clone Wars what he went through. But the fact that he goes for his blaster, right?
Yeah.
Of you see how hard he takes it. But his instinct right away is you are very dangerous, so I need to help you through this. Like a lesser person would have just started firing because they've been through the trauma and like, yeah, no. I gotta take care of this. But he finds a way through the same way as Wrecker does, like you're describing.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And it's just something about it. Just like, what's inside you that you must remove.
Yes. Find a device. Get a friend like tech to make you a device to scan for your chips. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think another big idea for me is it's connected to everything we've been talking about, but it just kind of jumped out of like clone lives matter, like all lives matter in Star Wars. I didn't mean to phrase that in any sort of modern socio-political way, but that really there's a focus specifically on, of course, Rex and Bad Batch and our heroes are very much concerned with lots of people they encounter. But this episode was kind of Rex, a clone. Mm-hmm. Who's helped other clones helping these clones.
Right.
And I thought that really felt to me like there's this ongoing question of our actual ability to stay alive and safe matters. But of course, like our autonomy, our souls matter. And there's this ongoing question of, are they going to work for Sid? They are working for Sid, but are they going to keep working for Sid? And that really felt like the purpose of the lizard Ruby at the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Of, they bring it back and Hunter keeps doing this of like, I'm working for you, but I'm questioning you and I don't like it. And they ask, you know, well, who wanted Ruby and what for? And Sid said, maybe it's a pet. Maybe he wants to turn it into a stew. Don't know. Don't care. There's that question of like, what is a lizard? Food, pet, financial commodity. And it really feels like that exact same question is hanging over the Bad Batch. Like, not only what do they want to do, but why do different people want them? Like, Sid wants them around because they're mercenaries that she has over a space barrel. But then there's also that question of, well, certainly the Kaminoans want them.
Mm-hmm.
But who else wants them, and for what? What are they to the galaxy? Are they food, pet, financial commodity? Need their DNA? You know, what is their value according to other people in the galaxy?
Meat and a clone stew. The Grief Karga might have a thought on that. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And that opening sequence, you don't waste sequences like that. There's going to be something there, and it had a great purpose with great comedy. And adorable lizard. I like lizards and stuff. So again, I was happy with that little roly-poly lizard. But yeah, no, I love what you're saying about the big question and the value.
Yeah, yeah. And so much of this was this episode was Rex really saying, like, you know, it's not just that you're a risk; it's that you can't be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your choices matter. Who you want to be matters. Let's get you fixed so you can be who you want to be.
Love it. Love it. Which might dovetail a little bit into the final thought I had of some of the big themes here of what I touched on, taking control of your path. We know the chips, it's been brought up, Crosshair, you know, maybe doing this not all on his own, you know, that the Empire certainly starting a habit of wanting to take away control, your own personal agency and all mm-hmm. those things, those big themes. And so that's there. But I looked at this episode again. So the chip's there. They got to remove the chip, overcoming what's inside you. There's some great lines about that. It's not something that you can control. What's in your head is more dangerous than you can imagine. But then, so take control of that. Even in our own lives, especially if you're facing something inside you, it's a perilous journey to do that. And there is the line of "This is dangerous." I believe Omega says that. So I just really was moved by that. That sometimes to take on what's inside you, including anger, things you don't want to face. It's not going to be easy. You might have to be Wrecker over a Dianoga trying to face everything that's inside. And I enjoyed that part of the story too.
Yeah. And to me, that's a part of the visual storytelling of, you know, Braca is a place of old broken things and salvage, but it's a dark place. There's the water suggests sort of the ancient and the amniotic and the half remembered. Mm. It really has a feeling that is, it's not a force journey, but it has a feeling that is very similar to Luke going down and descending into the Dagobah cave and Rey descending into the mirror cave. It really had, this whole episode really had a very ancient mythic go into the darkness and face the horror so you can come out the other side.
Totally. Yeah. Like Exegol.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think for me, in terms of like big Star Wars themes, mm-hmm. You're right. Choice is what is hanging over this whole show. But I thought this was extra powerful. We definitely kind of know it factually that Order 66 is Sidious, the Empire, just entirely taking away choice. But we really got to viscerally experience it because we've spent time with Wrecker. We like Wrecker. He's a fun, goofy comedy character. So to see this absolute horror happen to this character who has also the potential to be fun and lovable and goofy, right? And to see the horror of him saying good soldiers follow orders. Mm. I mean, that's just like the subtext of that is I am owned by Darth Sidious. You know, I am not myself anymore. I am a piece of property. And then followed up with like his apology to Omega saying, you know, I really tried. I couldn't make it stop. I felt like this episode really highlighted the horror of Order 66, but also the larger point of Sidious and the Empire trying to take choice and control away from everybody else. And then the fact the episode was really buttoned up by that conversation about Rex saying, hey, Hunter, you can choose to come help us. The Bad Batch, your squad would be really great. You don't need to choose. And Hunter saying, or you do need to choose. And Hunter saying, I'm still working out what's best for us. But right now, Omega is my absolute priority. So making this big choice while still wrestling with this big theme of choice.
Yeah. yeah, you mentioned it, like, hangs over the episode. It just hangs over Star Wars, doesn't it now?
It really does. It really does. And sometimes it's just like you can kind of dive underneath and go, oh, yeah, that's what's really going on. And an episode like this makes it incredibly explicit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also just thought under the general banner of choice, it was interesting to see that Rex doesn't even appear to trust Echo with knowing Ahsoka is alive.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got excited. I wanted to talk a little bit about what I felt was a lack of Rex and Echo connection. And I don't mean that from a criticism. So, I mean, like, in story, I was like, wow, we got a great clink moment of drinks. I'll put later in Comedy and Whimsy. But yeah, we didn't have a heart to heart. We didn't have anything.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, Echo is the first one who says Rex, you know, but it's Echo specifically saying, like, okay, well, you know, if you can't control it when it happens, how did you get your chip to stop? And there's that kind of pregnant pause where Rex is like, well, I had some help, you know, from the Jedi that you know too, Echo. You know, it was a real, like, it felt like a choice of, like, yeah, I can't even trust my old friend Echo, the one that Rex risked everything on the possibility that he was still alive, you know, that there was that amount of intimacy and connection between them in season 7. And there's a moment where I felt like we could see the damage that Rex is under of, like, I can't not even Echo.
Yeah. I love that. And you know, I'm not suggesting they got heat. I'm with you. A lot of things at stake. And if you're around the galaxy by yourself, man, you know, you're going to hold some cards close to the chest.
Yeah. And maybe it'll be like, once the chips are out, we can chat.
Yeah.
But maybe not best when we're going to remove chips to be like, you know, I know a living Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah.
So any other big themes that reflect a larger story and morality perspective of Star Wars?
I mean, just connecting again, I mentioned just, I love a lot of things. Just, I don't want to say all roads lead to Rise of Skywalker. That'll get someone throwing a shoe at me or something. But a lot of things pop to me, and I pop a lot to that Lando stuff of we had each other, and just that's why the friendship thing popped for me, even in areas where it wasn't necessarily direct. You mentioned Rex kind of hiding the information, but also admitting he didn't do this alone. And it's the stuff at the end with what you said about Rex and the Republic, but also that, you know, we know he's plugged into something out there, and that kind of, and other people and other characters in the galaxy, that's the ongoing theme. And you just have to discover that and feel the comfort of knowing that you have each other, and then you can do big things. And so that runs all through Star Wars for me. So there's that one. And then I mentioned, like, Luke standing over Ben in Last Jedi, confronting what's inside him, just that doesn't go away. And that's why I think Luke's journey in Last Jedi is powerful for me personally, about just, you know, you don't always, you know, you might temporarily conquer your demons, but you're always going to have it there. You're always going to have to choose to overcome some things. And that's why I took that from the chip, and just to see that at play in Star Wars time and time again is inspirational for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That once you defeat your demons, eventually they're going to make another run at you. Yeah.
Sadly.
I think for me, this is exactly what you've been talking about. I really connected with it on a larger level of definitely connection. But I think I was just thinking the word home, because it was something I was so affected by from the first episode of the Bad Batch series, that we got to see that the Bad Batch, we knew them as these colorful butt-kicking badasses. But then we saw that room on Kamino, and we saw that tradition of they come home from a mission and they mark it. They're going through a journey together, and one of the things that connects them is this feeling of returning home. And I felt like the Mantel mix was that, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the point where they even use the term tradition, right?
Yeah.
That, like, Wrecker obviously is, you know, childlike, and that is fun and funny. But I think Wrecker is childlike in also being able to be somewhat honest, not entirely honest, about what he needs and what he wants. And that, it's not just that the Mantel mix is fun and delicious. It's that tradition in a sense of home, in a sense of familiarity, grounds you in feeling connected, right? Mm-hmm. And I loved how much the Mantel mix was. This is how we mark the end of a mission because from Wrecker's perspective, I can't go home to my room on Camino and mark it on the wall. So now I mark it by eating this specific food with Omega. And then the huge amount of comfort that she gives to him by continuing that tradition.
Yeah, I love that. No, I love it. It feels like, this is almost silly, but like I think of sometimes when you're traveling and you're out in a hotel, by day two, I form a new tradition to feel comfortable in that hotel.
Right, exactly. Yes, exactly. Where you put your suitcase or whatever. Yeah. Yes, yes. I come in and I stare at that weird painting on the wall. Yeah, I'm home. Any other thoughts before we take a break?
No, but just a lot at play in this episode, which is why I love that it was way quieter than I would have expected. If you were to say, Rex comes back, the chips go bad, Wrecker's chips go bad, or the chips are removed, they'd be like, wow, what a crazy... Did Tarkin show up? No, they'd all just kind of hung out and fought a monster and talked about it.
Yep. It was, in some ways, I think, an extra beautiful episode because there was a certain amount of simplicity while still, as you just listed off, a lot happened.
Yeah,
absolutely. Excellent. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll talk about some of the things that happened, action moments, comedy moments, fun, juicy canon moments, all that in just a moment.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Radio.
4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of episode 7 of Bad Batch Battle Scars. We are going to talk action moments. Ken, I am fascinated about how the tone of action changes throughout the Bad Batch show. Some weeks it's like, oh, that was really cool action, but it was brutal, horrible, basically murder, well directed. And then sometimes it'll be like, hey, this is fun. The baby Rancor and Wrecker punched each other out. Fun. And then kind of a mixed thing like this, if there is definitely some cool action, but all extremely weighted by emotion.
This was Jennifer Corbett writing this episode, Savory is directing it. There's some really great moments. And I'll start with one of my simple favorite action moment for me is Hunter taking out those ships in the opening sequence. I have come to realize I am a sucker for gun turrets in Star Wars. I don't know what it is about it, but like Rise of Skywalker, Finn, when he gets into the Falcon gun turrets and he's confident, and he's like, yeah, I got this. It's not Force Awakens, but I was learning this. And he takes out his ties. I just love that stuff. So when Hunter's like, boom, 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 I just like that stuff. So there you go. I learned something new about myself.
Yeah, you learned that you were a big gun turret fan. Look for the photos of Ken's gun turret tattoos, right?
Yes. Well, there was an old game I played on the Commodore 64 called, I think it was Beachhead 2, and it was, you were fighting Nazi planes, and you were on a ship, and you had a gun turret, you had to move back and forth with a joystick. Horrible animation, obviously, in like 84. And I was not good at it, and I think my obsession to get better at it is why I like gun turrets.
There was a bonus level on not N64, GameCube, Rogue Leader game that was just you were in the gun turret escaping the Death Star. And I played that so much pure gun turret action.
There you go.
But I also do like that, you know, they are the stars of the show, so they are being put in jeopardy and making mistakes and that. But it's a nice every once in a while to just see them kicking ass too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think for me, my first favorite action moment was crossing the cable, partially just because it felt for just like a moment of like, oh, wow, the Bad Batch is on Jedi Temple Challenge.
Kelleran Beck comes out of the corner, reads the Jedi Oath and everything.
Yeah. It's just great. Like, it's classic, you know, going back to the first Star Wars film of the adventure of swinging across a chasm on a rope. Yeah. It really had that just like, yeah, this is adventure stuff. And it's got heights, and we know that Wrecker hates that. A lot of stuff going on, but just the basic crossing the cable. But it also just felt like I could see, like, that's the new challenge. If there's ever a season 2 of Jedi Temple Challenge, can you cross the cable in the destroyed Star Destroyer, Venator class Jedi cruiser? So that was the first one, just the actual act of crossing a cable. Yeah. How about for you? What were some other moments?
So so funny. I hadn't had a chance to look it up until you clarified it was a Dianoga, but I put Wrecker and the Sea Monster. great poem. You should read it. That whole sequence was very effective to me. So it's not new to Star Wars. Literally now it makes sense. Not new to Star Wars. I was like, this is, like you said, echoes of the, oh, okay. Now Joseph has told me it's the same sequence, but I mean that in a good way. Echoes of that, Lord of the Rings, any fantasy, sea monster, something coming out. Be careful of the water. Boom, tentacles grab you. Not new in a way, but it was so effective. I'm calling this a triumph of friendship, this whole sequence here, which is why that friend theme maybe popped for me. Just you need to do this, and a great shot. Talk about everyone, how beautiful the show looks. It does. Every review is, this just looks amazing. There's that one shot of just the rope in the water and all goes quiet and just the water sloshing. I couldn't believe his animation, right? I'm going back to my Commodore 64 days, I guess, where it's like, that looks so real, and it really built up the tension. That entire sequence, like I said, triumph and friendship and got me.
Yeah, like water being one of the arch enemies of animation and being like, we have defeated that enemy. We shall prove it with this shot. Yeah, I really liked Wrecker versus the Dianoga in particular because, yeah, it's great pulp serial adventure. It's a great Star Wars tradition. And I think some episodes of the Clone Wars, sometimes there's another challenge thrown in to just really keep that adventure serial thrill of out of the frying pan into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But in episodes of Clone Wars and in this particular moment, it's really successful and really heightened when it's like loaded with subtext, right? Because what happens in this little action moment is also what is at stake in the episode is the darkness is trying to drag Wrecker under. Yeah. And is that what will happen? So it's like, that's great that you were fighting with the Dianoga, but you were fighting with the subtext of the episode, Wrecker.
I love that. I love that. It's not a small thing you just brought up to me, too, because I think sometimes if you just look at these episodes on the surface, it's like, oh, okay, that was a fun sequence. On to the next thing. What did that prove? And that's what's there. That kind of stuff there, the big themes. Why we talk about it. And I love that fighting with the subtext of the episode is a great way to look at it.
Yeah. And now we're going to have so much fun canon thoughts about the Dianogas and where they live and what they look like. So great.
Mind blown.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was. Anyway, I almost went off into I wonder if there was enough water on Lotho Minor where Maul lived with the spider legs. Did he have a Dianoga friend?
Yeah.
We'll get into it. So any other action moments for you? Obviously, there is the big action of Wrecker loses control.
Well, in those, there's a couple moments I'll highlight, and we can just talk about the overall sequence and what you loved and then as well. Well, love's a weird word to say in the sequence, right?
Exactly.
Effective. It's scary. The first moments of Wrecker losing it, ominous. The choking of tech and great music. And I think all through the week, I think Kevin Kiner's been tweeting out just like, oh, just scored the final episode of season one. Oh my God, I'm crying at my own music. Like, and not bragging, but just like, this is standby. And like David Collins, who's so good at the soundtrack stuff and the score stuff, just even had some stuff about this week. And I was like, I was always like, what is going to happen? Dear God. Like, I even thought, I was like, is Wrecker going to die? Like, is head going to explode? I was pulled in. So when he first, the chip goes off and he chokes Wrecker, starts choking Wrecker. It's great. It's really scary. It is a bit of a horror vibe as well in that. And then in that too, just a heartbreaking moment for me is when Omega fires the first shot at Wrecker, you know, missing because of the tension, and you cut back to her again, the directing on that, it just broke my heart because, you know, you're flashing back to the, you know, Mantel mix, carnival food. And she knew she had to do that. And what a big step for her, but what important it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's a real moment about choice too, right? Because Hunter gave her very direct orders to stay out of it and to stay in the room with Tech, you know? Mm-hmm. And she made that choice of like, no, I gotta try to help, as she always does. But then that specific shot is a real match for that direct shot I like of that long, dark hallway with just a little bit of light thrown on Omega, you know, as one of those moments that for me really did make it this sort of emotional tone poem about loss and darkness, but this little bit of hope as well. And she's in this little shaft of light in that cool action moment, doing this terrifying thing that she needs to do. Absolutely great.
Yeah.
I really loved the initial moment of Wrecker finally breaking. And, you know, obviously it's almost comic the amount of head bashing he goes through, right?
And
that keeps making it worse. So there's a great switch up there of like, is Wrecker going to hit his head one more time and then that's going to be it? And I loved the contrast. It made the action pop even more for me that it's this accidentally unguarded conversation between Rex and Hunter about experiencing Order 66 and Hunter reviewing what happened in the first episode of like, yeah, no, we couldn't save the general, but we saved that to Padawan. And like, it's like almost hearing those words is what breaks Wrecker.
Yeah.
To make it switch of like, yep, the people I'm with saved a Jedi kid. Mm. And then the choke of Tech is definitely one I wanted to bring up because I love Tech and it was hard to see him choked and thrown against the wall. But the other action moment that I really enjoyed, again, appreciated, I think that's better, is even in this horrible, his choice taken away, extra violent Wrecker moments, he still follows his instinct to throw one of the people he's fighting at another one of the people he's fighting. Particularly effective when he throws Echo into Rex's stun beam and then cracks, you know, Rex in the head is a great moment.
He's got skills. He's got a skill set. He knows how to use it all.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought a final action moment for me is I thought it was great that it was Rex who did manage to stun him.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah,
good yeah, point. Because it Rex really came here to do this, to make sure that no other horrors happened. Because of Order 66, right? So the fact that, you know, that's got to be a little healing for Rex's soul that Wrecker was probably about to kill Omega. It's all, like, awful to even say that sentence out loud, but that's the horror of what was at stake in this episode, right?
Yeah.
And Rex stopped that horror from happening. Is it makes me feel good for Rex's healing.
Yeah. 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 I like that.
Any other action moments for you?
No, just overall that big sequence. It was like so well done. The little horror sequence, but just going up top to what you said of just with it being Omega, with it being the focus, and that was a great choice. And you know, I don't know, this episode sometimes might not have great repeat value for me personally. Like, okay, great, this is great. But this sequence, and I might go back to this one and revisit it a few times if I'm watching stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I think, for me, my wife hasn't watched Bad Batch yet, so we're going to save it up. And I'm really looking forward at seeing this episode fresh through her eyes, right? And she's a Star Wars fan, but not, you know, to that same like, ooh, they referenced this. Does that mean this character is going to show up? You know, will Fennec Shan tie into Book of Boba Fett? Like, and she will experience this purely emotionally. And I think that's the best way to experience this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's move on then to moments of comedy, whimsy and weirdness. Even in a very dark, scary episode, there were plenty of moments of whimsy. What do you got on your list, Ken?
Look, man, first of all, in terms of the whimsy, the cute, the endearing, Omega naming the lizard Ruby, right? You said Ruby?
Yeah.
Love that. Again, I am personally a fan of lizards, iguanas, reptiles of that nature. Snakes, not so much can do, but a good lizard I love. So I thought that was wonderful. And just even Wrecker, you named me? Like, it's just they're that's why this episode was so effective. Their older brother, younger sister relationship is just, I just love it every week. So that worked for me. But to immediately go to Sid, the couple Sid lines of that is one strange looking lizard. It's just made me laugh. But even when she comes back with when Hunter's kind of, you know, this is all we get for credits, and what do we you know, what have you done for us? And she says, "You're breathing, aren't you? Pretty generous considering what you owe me." This was the moment that I really, really just am thankful that we don't just have a character that popped in and we go, "Oh, remember the one time Rhea Perlman came in and read a couple lines for Star?" No, Rhea Perlman is in Star Wars and it's great. You know, yeah. Sid's a little, you know, maybe she'll get some comeuppance. Maybe she's just got a heart of gold that hasn't really fully emerged yet. I don't know. But this month, I was like, this is Carla. And I love it. Just love the Cheers of Star Wars.
Yes, I've been watching some old episodes of Cheers, and it is really great to see Carla and Sid both working the absolute power of that sharp tongue and sharp wit. Man, the "You're breathing, aren't you?" was great comedy because it's dark comedy, which I sometimes like, of like, she's being pretty honest of like, that's like one of those moments that really connected her flippant attitude about Ruby the lizard too. If we get the humanizing of calling it Ruby, and then like, she's, I don't know, maybe it's a pet, maybe they're gonna eat it, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
And then kind of reminding the Bad Batch, like, remember, you're a bunch of lizards to me. You have a financial value right now. You're breathing, and I could stop that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So good, funny, and scary stuff from Sid. And that is one strange looking lizard. It was a good, nice, straightforward joke, well delivered. for me, I think one of the first moments is the Mantel mix. It was just the whole idea of it, but specifically coming at the end of that list.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about last week, the comedy is really effective for me when you feel like, it's one joke and I get it. And then whoops, nope, we're kind of turning and doing another joke on top of that first joke. And I liked that. It was kind of this fun joke of Sid basically just, like a dubious car salesperson just adding on weird taxes, right?
Yeah.
To what they owe her. And then, you know, Hunter being kind of annoyed and upset about that. And then Mantel Mix being that joke of like, 20 carton, what the hell are you even talking about? And then leading to the cut of seeing Omega and Wrecker and Wrecker's childlike, I don't know, put it on Sid's tab. Also a good way to communicate that they've been doing lots of adventures, right? Or missions. That
you
get that at the top that they've been doing this for a little while now, but like if this tradition is 20 cartons of Mantel mix deep, that's a decent amount of missions.
Yeah I mean definitely the bit of that time jump up top, right? And I was kind of like, are they running, like, you know, is this picking up from the last weeks? And it's like, I like to have a little bit of space. That's good.
Yeah absolutely. So what were some other moments for you?
Great exchange with Tech. That's not her ugly side. What was that? Goggles, like goggles will never not make me laugh. Love that. I love it. I always forget to write down the two bar patrons there, the Weequay and the Ithorian there. But
Bolo and Ketch.
Thank you, because they are in the credits. Bolo and Ketch. I love when is it Ketch that is the Weequay?
Yes.
Okay.
To the best of my googling, there's a voice acting credit that claims Bolo is the Ithorian.
Perfect. Okay. I apologize to Bolo and Ketch for not clarifying this, writing this down before the show. When Ketch says when they're confronting Rex, which, by the way, hey, that's my seat. I was like, we are definitely in Cheers. Great moments. Hi, I'm so and so. What do you do? I'm Norm. I sit there. I'm paraphrasing, but one of my great Cheers favorite moments there. I love when he's like, oh, he's ignoring you, as if like, I just got it. Just less intelligent people thinking they're in control sometimes makes me laugh. It's a Steve Martin school of I'm pompous, but I'm clueless to how bad I am. I just love the, oh, he's ignoring you. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, I like the idea that maybe Bolo and Ketch can intimidate some people who come into this sketchy bar, but they do not understand that they are playing with another level here, right? This isn't just some like a tipsy Rodian under a hood that they can push around like, oh, you are so far out of your league, Bolo and Ketch.
Loved it.
Yeah, great stuff. For me, a couple other good Tech lines. Love Tech. I liked when they got to the medical bay on the Jedi cruiser and Tech sees what the subtitles just call rat. I'll call it a space rat climbing through the medical bay. He says, I would no longer call this medical bay a sterile environment.
It's rat with apostrophe, right? Just R-A-T. Come on.
It's two like the band. Two T's like the band. Rat.
Like
the band Rat is in this medical bay.
L.A. Guns, George Lynch and the Lynch Mob, and Rats all featured in this episode.
Yeah, and it's continuing like with his, it's such a great continuation of not just the Tech genius, because you could have the Tech genius who doesn't really understand emotions, who is just into numbers and needs everything on a spreadsheet. Like, that's a part of his character, but also he's just like, he's fastidious. Like, you know, he's the guy who's just like, I got to dust every seat before I sit down.
Right.
And like that, with him being like sort of disgusted by the bar on Ord Mantell, it goes along with that of like, ooh, no, this is not a sterile environment. It seems less like he's concerned about the safety of it and more that he's like, this is gross, wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you obviously love Tech so much, with such good reason. We highlight Tech every week, is he's just one of the standout characters. But I just to drive the point home again, you could handle this so bad. If it's a CBS sitcom with a laugh track, this would be a bad low hanging fruit joke about character traits or who he is, you know, all those kind of things. Tech is so good as a character. It all, the comedy just comes from such truth.
Yeah,
really celebrate every week.
Yeah, in my final line, I'll kick it back to you, is another tech one that I was so invested in the emotion of the show, I didn't even really process it as a funny line, but it made me laugh out loud the second time I watched the episode, is there is that montage of waiting, and, you know, Omega refuses to leave until they see if Wrecker's going to be okay, if his vitals are going to stabilize. And when they do, Tech just entirely undercuts it with his delivery of, oh, you made it.
Right.
Like it's a science experiment.
Yes, it's great.
Yeah. So that's it for me. What other moments of comedy or whimsy you got?
Yeah, a couple. I mentioned up top, but the Rex and the Echo drink clink, which again, there's a connection. There's a friendship there. I'm just intrigued by what Rex wasn't saying, as you were as well. But I love that moment. You know, you and I are hotel lobby bar guys. We'll clink drinks, and I love it there. Clink, clink, indeed. But I especially coming out of the pandemic, as we're getting there, I've been in a couple situations lately where just like looking across at a friend and like 5 minutes into the conversation, suddenly we're like, yeah, clink a drink. We're here. And
yeah,
had that vibe of they hadn't seen each other in a bit. They've gone through some stuff and talking. Hey, man, good to see you, buddy. Yeah, clink, clink. I just love that.
Yeah. You know, I did. I forgot to write it down, but I did like the whole vibe of that scene of, you know, I love the bar aesthetic. I love that, you know, Sid, Rhea Perlman she's in her weird dank space chairs.
Yeah.
It's even underground, right? But there was also a vibe that Bad Batch and Rex are like, yeah, that's they're not just having one drink, like they're drinking. You know, no G apostrophe. There's where the apostrophe is this episode. They're drinking. and like there's these little reminders of like we're soldiers, you know, and we do missions and we're great at tactics. And at the end of a mission, we drink.
I'll tell you what, if at the end of the Sid run, it's revealed that there's a Melville's restaurant above her bar here, we get the full Cheers aesthetic going. And I would love that. I would love that.
That will be the happy end, is after the end of the Galactic Civil War, the Bad Batch opens up a nice seafood restaurant.
Yeah.
Serving Dianoga. Any other moments for you?
Omega has, she's so great too, obviously, but just when Tech's going off about the chip finder tech he's working on, and she goes, he means it's almost finished. She's so darn cute and endearing, but just it works really well. And the last handful of Mantel mix, after all we've been through, and it's to bring back some, basically popcorn, little popcorn mix, gourmet popcorn there. I just thought it was really effective, really sweet. And after the darkness we went through, it helped send us forward with a nice tone.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's a great moment to highlight too, be for the delivery of the actor portraying Omega, Michelle Ang, I believe, that, and the people editing this, like, I wonder how many that actor recorded. Yeah. But it was so real, because it wasn't just this is tasty. It was like she discovered a flavor in the Mantel mix that she hadn't had before. Like, interesting.
It's like anytime I try a new flavor of White Claw, like, oh, mango peaches, great.
I can really taste the end cream. Amazing. Yep. Amazing. All right, let's get into some canon and lore connections. I don't think there was as much different things, but the things that were there were kind of rich, right? Let's just start with Rex, because this is Rex close to a generally close timeline to when we saw him in season 7, complete with a visible cut on his head where his inhibitor chip was removed. And then Rex in this episode, it all works emotionally, but he's a machine of direct references to previous appearances and relationships. Did you enjoy that in general, that it wasn't just Rex? It was Rex really dropping references to many moments of his storied career.
Yeah. Yeah. Rex was a little bit of the Clone Wars report here on Force Center. new episodes coming after the Bad Batch reps. I put season 7 of Clone Wars and of course 5s and the previous chip arc and just like I said, direct mention, because Tech didn't get the super Wikipedia moments this time around like he's got in the past. I was expecting him to be, you know, Braca 5 years from now, Cal Kestis will be. But yeah, I love Rex. And look, and it's it's playing with Star Wars, playing with its own lore, I guess, and it's inside baseball. But they always present it in a way where you just don't need to know. You don't need to know. And Fives is a little more direct, and maybe you'll seek it out if you don't know. But you know, I think it's okay for them to just be like, if you're watching Bad Batch, this is a little different than Mandalorian. You probably aren't familiar.
Yeah, and even if you aren't, Fives tried to warn me, and that's a fun, like, ooh, I'm into these clones now, and I wasn't before. Let me go look up that arc, and you'll get a lot of gratifying things in that arc that really, because it's so about clone culture, going to that clone bar, you know, that there's a lot there. But that was one of those, like, that was so both gratifying and painful. The Fives tried to warn me, because you know that's got to be going through his head, right, of, oh, if I had listen to Fives, what would have been different? Or if I had believed, because he did listen, it's just that he believed the lie that something else was wrong with Fives, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does everything track for you with Rex between season 7 Clone Wars? Obviously, he's coming off of that, and we're seeing how he's haunted. But then I haven't gone back and rewatched his early appearances in Rebels, but it does feel like this is the kind of thing that people might get hung up on, that we've now seen in season 7 that he really did need help with his inhibitor chip. He didn't just resist it. He seems to be actively working with a young rebel cell. But then by the time we meet him in Rebels, he seems a little retired and needs to be brought back into the fold. And I know people during season 7 of Clone Wars were concerned that he kind of said, I resisted the inhibitor chip. So I just wanted to check in with you about how you're feeling about the tracking all of the different beats of Rex through the years.
I think it's working, and there might be some blurry edges on it, particularly that stuff in Rebels, but nothing that knocks me off the hill of enjoyment here. But I even had the thought, because I mentioned just season 7 of Clone Wars, we're not so far removed from season 7 of Clone Wars. You're right, there's some time passed. We don't know how many missions are on, roughly 20 or so, you would say. Like, you know, it's enough time to be like, where were you? But if you weren't super familiar with it, you'd be like, oh, this guy's been gone for like 5 years. If you weren't familiar with the timeline. So blurry edges in a way, but I'm excited. To me, where I'm sitting right now, something happens that sends him and the other clones out and about and away from it all.
Yeah, I think so too. He's very actively involved. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point he retires with Wolf and Gregor, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think there's even, we'll talk about it in a moment, I think there's even a possibility of some reference to maybe some of that, but we'll see. I did like that his Y-Wing was in the background with blue stripes and all. Also just a visual follow-up from where we left him at the end of season 7 of Clone Wars, and I was happy to see it kind of, they didn't highlight it, or nobody did a Wikipedia entry, but it all tracks with just visual information we're given at the end of season 7, that he had that Y-Wing and the broken remains of R7A7, and he clearly is working with both those things.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And last big thing I wanted to talk to you about with Rex is, you know, are you having fun speculation about who all he's working with? You know, it was the another kind of not cloaked figure like he literally was last week, but we didn't see or hear who he's talking to when he's saying, I'm going to rendezvous with you at the next rotation. There are others out there. Obviously, he's got a connection to Trace and Rafa. Do you have fun speculation about what all is Rex's early rebellion cell?
I think there could be an all-star list of possible names, and even ones that you wouldn't expect. I don't know. Throw Raddus, Dodonna, Rycan, any of the people that we know and love all through the Star Wars galaxy. I think it could be, the Ahsoka of it all, there's got to be some separation, right? I mean, there's got to be, they don't really, again, something happens, they don't really see each other until Rebels, right? It's been a bit since some of the details are blurry in my own brain, which is why I'm just kind of enjoying it play out in front of me. But no, I don't have the big predictions. Wolf Gregor, any other clones, new characters we haven't met, Saw Gerrera, even though we've already spoken to Saw. Any of those could work in addition to, Trace and Rafa.
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, because the timeline is, I think, open to interpretation, unless there's something, you know, I missed. And I think that has generally been the storytelling ethos of we'll lock in a date if we need to. Otherwise, things are a little fluid and things can connect. So there is a part of me that feels like, you know, in the Ahsoka novel, she, spoilers for the Ahsoka novel, Ahsoka eventually does meet up with Bail, right?
Correct.
And there is a part of me is like, is this Bail's cell that's kind of put together through Ahsoka? And that's part of the reason Rex is being so guarded. But also part of the reason that he's like, the Republic's not gone. This man I respect, Bail Organa, is still working from the inside. And, you know, we have these common points of connection.
I think I'm just so rooting for, Bail, for more Bail. And maybe even going as far as seeing some Breho Organa. Like, yeah, I root for that almost any time.
Yeah, yeah. Either that or Quinlan Voss. It's all Quinlan Voss.
It's all Quinlan Voss.
Yeah, yeah. But I just, I kind of hope for a little bit of a, and I don't know if it would feature ever in Bad Batch, but yeah, a little bit of the Bail and Ahsoka and Rex. Mm-hmm. There's something in that Rex is like, he's not entirely isolated from everything and everyone he knew, that there is hope that the old way can return.
Can turn. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Any other Rex thoughts?
I do enjoy what Rex became from the Clone Wars series to now, where not only just popular, but he's super valuable to the story and has the battle scars indeed. And even the lines in his face, as we now have Omega pointing out, there's a certain sense of home for me now when Rex comes up. And I'm just saying to myself, as someone who, you know, was there with the Clone Wars early enough, but hadn't the movie and all those kind of things, to see where Rex, we talk about Ahsoka and where Ahsoka started, which was in a far worse place, is just the fandom rejecting the character and just where she is now. I think you could say that about Rex a little bit as well. Just here we are now with him being a standby, a venerable character that shows up to bring a sense of calm, peace, and purpose.
Absolutely. And it is that, I had that weird experience of like, yeah, Rex, yeah, listen to Rex's distinctive voice. Wait. wow. This is amazing. Cause even like Rex and Hunter are, you know, pretty similar, you know, Tech and Wrecker are two examples of like more extreme variations, and even Crosshair and Rex and Hunter could potentially be very similar, but like, no, those are two distinct clones talking to each other, and that's Rex.
Right.
Great, yeah. Great stuff. A couple other just kind of fun things for me of I liked Tech's one kind of Wikipedia moment, not quite, but saying to Rex that he has been successful at keeping a low profile because Imperial files have you listed as killed in action. Mm-hmm. That was a great confirmation, right?
Yes.
Of kind of the final moment of Clone Wars, of Vader and all those snow troopers finding the crashed ship, and Vader finding Ahsoka's blade and all of those helmets, and the assumption that nope, they're dead.
Yeah, they're dead. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. And then Rex also says very few clones were immune to the effects of Order 66, which seems to confirm that some were immune, which is maybe gives us our Cut Laquane answer.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was real. He kind of just slipped that in there, didn't he?
He did. Yes. You know, he could have said, like, Gregor, not Wolf. I had to rescue him, you know?
Yeah, 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 right? Or just the idea that there's some Jedi we've really yet to meet who turns around and a couple of the clones are like, sorry, heartburn. I don't know, just felt weird. Let's continue.
Order 66, is that a deli order, Palpatine? Yeah. what are you talking about? But I love that. I love that there's someone just like, yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
For whatever reason, we had a long conversation on one of our recent News and Cues episodes because somebody asked that question of like, why didn't it work on Uncut? And, you know, maybe there's something to it, or maybe just, hey, some chips are defective. What are you going to do? They're like dishwashers. Sometimes they're lemons.
Love it. Love it.
All right. Moving on then. Braca is a great planet to have pop up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Technically introduced in the book Resistance Reborn, because it came out right before the video game Jedi Fallen Order. If anybody's not caught up, Resistance Reborn, set between The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, Leia sends Shriv from the video game Battlefront 2 and a crew to Braca, to this salvage planet, and they successfully get some X-Wings to rebuild the fleet of the Resistance. And then, of course, if you haven't played the video game Jedi Fallen Order, this is where Cal Kestis lives. This is where he crashed, right? And we get to basically there when the Bad Batch was climbing one of those thin beams. I was like, I've done that on Braca.
Yes, there was absolutely.
So what were your thoughts on going to Braco?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And this is, it's interesting. I always talk about what is new suddenly becomes old and familiar, and what you questioned, not that I questioned Braco, but just, you know, Fallen Order, some new planet. What is this? And now you just, it's, you get a warm, cozy feeling. And I, what I did at the conclusion of the first episode, as I was trying to fall asleep, like 1 a.m, I went to Wikipedia and looked up Braco, and like, just reminded myself what was there. And, you know, there was the, Star Destroyer, or excuse me, well, not Star, eventually could be considered Star Destroyers, but the Jedi cruiser that they were on, and everything. Just it's just fun, and I just love I love the connections to new things, and now it just seems so warm and cozy and familiar.
Yeah, yeah, that Jero Topol's and yeah. Cal's master, their ship crashed on Braco, so yeah, yeah. Who knows? Who knows? Mysteries abound. Yeah, I just also like that, you know, there can be this conversation often about, you know, what is too connected, what is not connected enough. And this is one of those moments of, this feels pretty connected for me. This is from a book that features video game characters and also from a video game. So there's like lots of emotional reaction. I think for me, I did have that moment of, I have felt like in general that Wrecker's chip going off is going to be exactly what it ended up being of he attacks his own because they are traitors who aren't following Order 66. But when we went to Braco, there was like, is he going to try to murder a very young Cal Kestis?
Yes, I had some of those. I had that vision of just a little kid popping out and going, hi, I'm Cal. Just go, what?
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe there'll be some connection later. But it definitely did bring that tension to my mind. And it did. It wasn't like a damaging distraction, but it definitely made me question what was going to happen in the episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Moving along. I like this one specific line. I wanted to highlight that Omega doesn't have an inhibitor chip. And I think that was a nice line to just remind her that there is still a mystery of what exactly her purpose is. Why did the Kaminoans create her?
There's definitely some intrigue that, I mean, that's been building, but it just, even for just Rex's reaction, not, I'm not gonna say ominous, but just
like, okay, she's a clone, huh? What is the deal with her?
That's the deal. Totally.
Exactly. Final thing for me is in that opening chase, very classic to have a broken hyperspace drive, right?
Good to point that out. We do a super cut of just all the hype drives being fixed at the last moment, which I'm totally fine with. Okay, talk about conditions.
That's what I had. Do you have anything else for canon lore?
No, it wasn't. What was there was pretty big and intriguing and all those things, but it wasn't like a laundry list of things in the background.
Yeah, I mean, this list could be much longer if we wanted to grab every evocative sentence Rex said. The I don't want to bury, you know, any more of our brothers, you know, and knowing like he means that literally. He physically did that, you know. Another painful moment from Rex.
Well, you and I doing the Clones Report, like I'm probably not going to rewatch season 7 until we get to it. But I got to tell you, like I was like, I might have to fire some of that stuff up. It just made me think about it a lot.
Yeah, no, and to watch it with this episode is a direct sequel would be great. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
Nothing in terms of story or anything. I just this one thing that's growing that I have a question about is, are we going to get Omega some armor, or at least some more armor? She got the nice little communication device, right? She got a weapon. I think it might be responsible to at least get her a baseball cap, something. They're in full armor, they're full mech, and she's there like, I'm just out playing. Get her a shield or something.
She is the most important thing to us. Will you give her some armor? No. I think there's almost, almost like this video game storytelling of like, oh, well, she's only beat the first temple, so she has her signature weapon, but she needs to beat the second temple before she gets her armor tunic, you know?
Yeah. Again, this isn't a, like, I'm going to make a video about it. I just like every week, you're right. Valuable asset. I don't know. Face mask on something.
Yeah. Gloves. Yeah. No, I think you're onto something. I think that might be one of the next evolutions because I love that crossbow that's hers. It's great. A bit of her identity. And like, what else is she going to find and pick up? You know?
Yeah. It's great. Love it.
Yeah. I think for me, this is I didn't dislike or question anything about the episode, except for one of my small hopes was lightly dashed that the appearance of Rex would bring us more Echo focus. That was not the focus of this episode. Yeah. And it's not a criticism of this episode, because I don't like criticizing things from the perspective of other things should have been there. I want to enjoy what was there.
Yeah.
But I am still left wanting an episode that brings us a little bit more focus on Echo himself.
Yeah, I feel we're going to get that. It just seems weird to not have that. But I mean, also, Crosshair's still coming. I think he's part of the crew that's probably going to be contacted, or at least sent out. That makes some sense for me. Like, we're building towards something. This had a little bit of Calm Before the Storm episode vibe to it. But I hope we don't get too far down the road without really having some quality time with clinking a drink with Echo.
Yeah, let's clink some more Echo drinks. I agree with that, which is a great segue into talking about hopes for the next episode or two. What are you wanting, Ken, for the next few episodes?
Yeah, I do want to not build like I've been loving these last couple weeks with these episodes that are they're just really adding to so much just emotional depth to the series and everything. So so happy with what's going on, but I'm looking around going, it is Crosshair's presence by his absence is just growing and growing and growing. The fact that he's not there is a little mention this week, but I just think with the Scrapper Guild going to contact the Empire, who are you going to send? Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? No, you're going to call Crosshair.
Yeah, and I think that there is some delicious ambiguity about who all wants the Bad Batch for what and why. I feel like the setup with Vice Admiral Rampart, right? It is Crosshair is his tool, right?
Yep.
And the Empire's perspective is wipe them out. They're a threat. But the Kaminoans, with that little discreet scene where they were staring at their empty mess hall table, seems like they need at least one of them for whatever advancement in cloning that they're going to make in order to try to keep their deal with the Empire. So I'm kind of wondering if we're going to get a little bit of a Blues Brothers episode where the different factions who want the Bad Batch for different reasons. The sort of analogy that I've been making with Ruby, there's going to be the people who want them as a pet and people who want them as a stew.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting if, Crosshair is on them for the really horrible reason to kill them all.
Yeah.
And if Fennec Shand has been hired by the Kaminoans to bring one of them back alive, that could be a fun three-way battle.
I think we're the Blues Brothers ending is a good call, sir.
Yeah. And I think for sure we're heading towards some situations that are going to push Hunter to make a decision, right? Because he made part of a decision the end of this episode of like, no, Omega and keeping her safe is our priority. And keeping the squad together and safe is my mission as the leader. But there's still that decision of I'm not really happy being Sid's mercenaries, and not sure if we want to get involved in this, rebellion, but that decision is going to need to be made. So whatever happens, I think, is going to put some good pressure on forcing Hunter and the rest to make that decision.
Yeah, and just for me to sum up, you just said, I really, really want to feel the pressure. That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, just like option A or option B, it's got to be one of them. You can't put it off. Yeah. And then I think I'm just going to say this every week until it happens. How long until Hondo?
Yes.
The question that's ringing in my soul. How long until Hondo?
Yeah.
Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on, Ken?
No, I did want to highlight the music. We did. And that Rex Echo stuff, we did discuss it too. That's the notes I had in this section. I want to make sure I touched on. So we touched on it and all good.
Yeah, ton of great music. Only other thing for me is the technical accomplishments of Bad Batch are really being praised, and I think that's great. A thing that I didn't pick up when I watched it on my television, but I did when I watched it on my computer with the earphones in, is that great sound design and sound mix for Bolo, the belligerent Athorian, when he's picking an unwise fight with Rex. I noticed that the tech seems to be on his head, neck, back, hump seems to be like translation. and you can hear that great, yes, odd, breathy, weird Athorian actual language voice underneath just a little bit.
It's so funny. I don't generally generally don't watch the show with headphones on, but last night I Grace was doing yoga in the living room at midnight, and I was watching Star Wars, and she asked me with the headphones on, and I heard that, and I think that was that's a great point. Really wonderful detail.
Yeah, absolute. Beautiful detail, beautiful work from everyone involved in Bad Batch. As always, we wrap up our Bad Batch Report episodes by talking about toys. Ken, if you could have a figure or a toy of any kind based on this episode, who or what do you want?
I got three choices. I hope I don't steal any from you, sir. I just scanned. I keep the episode notes. I just scanned. I haven't listed this one before. I do want Sid's necklace to be available. It's kind of a, you know, it's a grizzled weirdo old grandma necklace, pearl necklace kind of thing going on. If we could get that for sale at Galaxy's Edge at Doc Ondor's trading post there, I think that would be a hot seller. I really do.
Yes. I guess not Rhea Perlman, Rhea Pearl Lizard now.
Yeah. Similar vibe while you're shopping there. I want to get that, I'll call him the Strider from Lord of the Rings Rex cape that we got there at the bar. Just kind of hiding in the corner waiting for the hobbits to show up. I really like that one.
Oh, that's a great pull. Absolutely. Yeah, we absolutely need a caped, cloaked Rex. I love how bulky it is. Like, I got my whole armor on under here.
Yeah, there's some pockets. You can hold your checkbooks and walking around money, all those kind of things you and I love. Final one for me. Same thing. It's just a Galaxy's Edge day for me. I absolutely need to go get a bag of Mantel mix.
Yeah, that's going to be added, right? Yeah, no, and then you're going to need that at the end of the day at Galaxy's Edge. You've finished your mission. It's tradition that you leave munching on Mantel mix.
Yeah, look, is it just gourmet popcorn in a bag with Star Wars on it? $20 or more expensive? Yeah, but I'll buy two. Thank you.
I was going to say $20. That's like, you know, maybe $3 for the actual food and $17 for the memories. The other thing for me for Galaxy's Edge, I'll say, because it was really pronounced, that Sid's weird staff episode that looked like it was capable of great violence, but then she was casually cleaning her claws.
Yeah.
At one point. So I need the Sid's scary claw cleaning staff. I would also like, just for straight up action figures, for something as kind of straightforward as Scrapper Guild members. Those characters looked damn cool at the end. So I would happily take a good 3¾ Scrapper Guild member.
I absolutely on the little floating ship they got there. Yeah.
Yeah. Little trash skiff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing for me, which would be a life-size toy that I don't think would sell particularly well, cause I'm not sure how much fun it is for people to act out. But if you could buy a life-size, Tex inhibitor chip scanner, mm-hmm, and you could put it on your own head to see if you could find your own inner darkness.
That's deep.
Hey, kids, find your darkness. Yep, that maybe is not going to fly off the shelf, but I'd buy one. Anything else for you, Ken?
No, we've definitely got a lot of things to buy after this week.
Yeah, look, we've spending money left and right in our minds. Want to tell people where they can find us?
I'd love to. We are Force Center Podcast. We know a lot of newer people come on through, listen to this review. If you want to find us online, you can go to Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. You can like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. Get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. We're available a lot of different spots: Anchor, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music as well. You can support us directly by going to patreon.com/ForceCenter. And a recent Patreon addition, Brennan Marr at the top level, is going to get some Force Center trading cards his way soon. You can follow me at Ken Knapsack or go to my website, KenKnapsack.com. For you, Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Joseph Scrimshaw. If, like me, you like action figures, that's mostly what I do on my TikTok, is take pictures of action figures and just say things to them. I often talk to my action figures, but now I can share it with the world through the magic of TikTok. So check that out if you're interested. And then if you're interested in any of my other comedy adventures, comedy albums, future shows, the Adult Swim show I'm a writer for, TikTone, links to all that stuff are all on my website at josephscrimshaw.com.
But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Omega's possible future armor, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.